This Sandwell News podcast is divided into chapters.
Welcome to the Sandwell News for Saturday, August the 22nd. Sunrise this coming week will be at 10 past 6, sunset at 8:15. By Tuesday, temperatures will reach 22 degrees, but still, there will be little or no rain.
Well, that is the way it looks for next week, but I can tell you it was raining early today and how nice it was to feel it when I went out to do a bit of shopping earlier. Welcome to this latest edition of the Talking News for blind and visually impaired community living in and around Sandwell. And of course, the podcast will reach you on Thursday or Friday before the 22nd of August, if you're able to access that, and we're online on Thursday or Friday as well.
Hello, SVI member volunteers and friends. Here's a reminder of our activities coming up this coming week. Gym at Portway Lifestyle Centre, 10 to 12 noon. Come and join us at the gym. Our gym sessions are a great way to keep active, improve fitness, and enjoy some time with other members. Just a gentle reminder that for safety reasons, everyone must wear appropriate footwear. Please wear trainers or other supportive closed-toe shoes suitable for exercise. We look forward to seeing you at the gym, line dancing at Dartmouth Central Club. Line dancing will return on Tuesday, 22nd September. Showdown, Portway Lifestyle Centre, 2 to 4pm. Come and join us for this fast-moving, interactive sport that's a mix of table tennis and air hockey. It's specially designed for blind and visually impaired players, but others can join in. Thursday, 27th, August Showdown, Portway Lifestyle Centre, 10 to 12 noon. Dartmouth Park Walk, 12 noon. Meet us by the Dartmouth Park War Memorial, from where we will take a leisurely walk around the park and Sandwell Valley, stopping off for refreshments. Please let us know that you are coming so we can make sure we have enough sighted guides. Team members living outside of Sandwell, if you attend any session at Portway Lifestyle Centre and you do not live in Sandwell, activities will now incur a charge. If you receive a disability benefit such as PIP, you will need to register this at Portway's reception and purchase an annual concession card at £15. This will then give you a 50% discount on the session charge. Please note, this is a condition of Portway and SV. I will not receive any of the money in these transactions. Good news is that all other SVI activities listed are available to everyone regardless of where they live at no additional charge. It is important that you contact the office either by phone, message, Facebook or email to let us know that you are attending any of our events. That's all for this week. We look forward to seeing you soon. The SVI team, Sandwell Visually Impaired, West Bromwich Town Hall, B708AY, telephone 0121 525 4810. Website www.sandwellvisuallyimpaired.org.uk.
Before we get to the news headlines from the papers, you may have heard in the last day or two there are changes in the way the bus services in the West Midlands are going to be delivered. A lesser known announcement popped up a day or so earlier about the disabled person's pass, particularly when it comes to using buses. Here's just a brief piece of information about that.
What's changing for disabled people? Nablia Gardner welcomed plans to give free bus travel to disabled people 24 hours a day. The Prime Minister has announced that time restrictions on disabled bus passes will be scrapped. Currently, disabled bus passes are only eligible for use between the hours of 9:30 and 2300 on weekdays. the new changes will come into force on 1st April. Nabila Gardner, a disabled business owner from Birmingham, said the change was really useful. She told the BBC it would make a difference getting to appointments, seeing family, seeking new work opportunities, and socialising in new places. She added that a franchise model would make sure people have decent travel over profit. It feels like the government are realising that disabled people don't just exist between set times, she said of the change. Being disabled, you have to plan so much already. Not having to worry about leaving the house or getting on a bus too early, it's one less thing to worry about.
And there was a hint in there of some more news locally about the bus service and who's running it, and we'll have more about that a bit later on, perhaps towards the end of this edition. Now, here's Amelia yet again, and I will vary the voices a bit in future editions, but she's back with some of the headlines from this week's paper.
Some headlines from our Express and Star readings this week. In Wednesday's news, problems with physiotherapy. Thursday, Glaive thrilled to be Spring King. Friday, plans for more houses in Wensbury. The Archers celebrate 75th anniversary with live show. Saturday, devastation of wildfires. Birmingham 26 opportunity missed. Tributes pour in for former MP Peter Snape. Monday, warning over scam involving card payments. Tuesday, sad-looking flags across West Midlands.
And as you heard, the show to mark 75 years of The Archers is coming to Birmingham.
Fans of BBC Radio 4's The Archers will have the chance to step inside the world of Ambridge when a special live show arrives in Birmingham as part of the drama's 75th anniversary celebrations.
And Lauren will be back with that story and more on Friday. And along the way, towards the end of the paper, we'll have just a brief mention of the Black Country Museum and what you can enjoy there, as well as the TV listings from Talking News Federation, along with the forthcoming radio programmes for the week ahead. So we will go now to the news from the papers, courtesy of Express and Star Publications, and here's the first day's news.
This is James Brodie bringing to you stories from the Express and Star dated the 12th of August. Patients needing physiotherapy not getting quality care they deserve. Patients in need of physiotherapy are not getting the quality of care they deserve amid rising concerns about cuts to services leading physiotherapists have said. The Chartered Society of Physiotherapists, that's the CSP, said that NHS services are freezing recruitment, deleting posts, cutting back rehab space in the health service. As a result, patients are waiting longer for care, getting less rehabilitation and living with avoidable disability, it said. A poll from the Society has revealed that many physiotherapists in England are concerned about cuts to services. The June survey of 548 physiotherapists in England found three quarters, that's 79% of NHS physiotherapists, are concerned staffing levels are insufficient to meet patient need. Some 72% reported recruitment freezes in their service, up from 63% in 2025. More than a third, 37%, said that posts have been deleted within their service, and 30% reported cuts to entire services. Almost a third, 32%, said that as a result, there was a reduced time for patients. A third, that's 34% of NHS physiotherapists, reported dedicated rehabilitation space has been lost, whilst 47% said patients are experiencing increased disability because their loss of rehabilitation space. 74% of NHS physiotherapists said that they cannot provide the quality of rehabilitation patients needed, whilst 27% said they were seeing fewer patients each week. Meanwhile, 1 in 5, 20% reported that waiting times for their services had increased. The CSP has called to the government and the NHS in England to lift recruitment freezes, protect rehabilitation facilities and invest in physiotherapy workforce. Rob Yeldon, Director of Policy at CSP, said more services are freezing recruitment, deleting physiotherapy posts and cutting rehabilitation space at a time when demand continues to grow. The result is that patients are waiting longer for treatments, are receiving less rehabilitation, recovering more slowly, and some are living with avoidable disability as a result. Physios and rehab support workers face burnout as more rehabilitation space is lost and patients in more areas are not getting the quality of care they deserve. He added, the government can deliver on its promise to build a better NHS whilst rehabilitation services continue to deteriorate. Golfer makes 1 in 6 million shot in incredible golfing feat at Midland Course. This story is brought to you by Luke Powell. Supporting this article is a picture of a man in grey shorts with a blue polo shirt and then a man standing to the right of him in a golfing suit. The picture has the caption, Matt Vigors left continued his brilliant summer with an incredible hole-in-one at the Great Bar Golf Club. Golf history has been made at the West Midlands after one man defied the odds to produce an extraordinary hole-in-one. Matt Vigors' incredible shot at the Great Bar Golf Club last month could be the longest hole-in-one ever recorded in England, according to the country's governing body, England Golf. Matt's incredible drive on the 411-yard par 4 third hole at Great Bar turned into something sensational. First came the drive, then a search for the ball, and finally a moment of disbelief when he discovered that sitting in the bottom of the cup. The shot gave him an albatross, with the achievement commonly estimated to be around 6 million to 1 odds. Even more remarkable is that the plus 1 handicapper and Worcestershire first team player had made another ace at the Droitwich Club Championship just weeks before his Great Bar heroics, adding to the three he already had in his name. The 32-year-old had only returned to regular golf in February after 8 years living abroad, and is now enjoying a remarkable few months. It's been a good year, really, Matt said, especially considering I didn't really pick up a club for 8 years when I was living abroad. Matt went on to win the club championship at Droitwich, whilst in June he also claimed the Worcestershire County Championship. That form travels with him in a scratch match at Great Bar, where he produced his incredible albatross. Matt's playing partner's drives were grouped together, but his was missing. The 32-year-old checked out the left of the fairway and around 50 yards short of the green where he expected to find it, but there was nothing. He checked behind the green, still nothing. He explains, "We all hit good drives and we found three of them down there. Then we were looking for mine," he said. "At that point, I looked a bit silly as I thought I might as well check the hole, and there it was nestled in the bottom. I had to take two or three looks as I couldn't believe it. They didn't believe me till I pulled it out of the hole and we just went mad. It was so weird I couldn't concentrate for the next hole." It's not surprising that the feat threw him off his game, but he still went on to win the match, with Droitwich Golf Club sealing promotion from their league on the same day and celebrating in style. "It was an expensive one," said Matt, who works as a product and training manager at McLaren. The 32-year-old has kept his ball and hopes that the Great Bar might commemorate the achievement with potentially a flag to frame and talks of a plaque being placed on the hole. England Golf Championship director James Crampton said, "We hear of holes in one all the time." Jail for thief who stole from a shop nearly 50 times. A 33-year-old man has been jailed for 48 shop thefts committed across Sandwell. Matthew Marsh began his offending spree on February the 19th when he targeted a store in Thorn Road, Rowley Regis, stealing goods worth £140 before fleeing without paying. He went on to target three stores in Rowley Regis, stealing goods worth almost £2,740 in total. Marsh's string of offences came to an end on August the 3rd after he stole a bag of food from a store. The incident was reported to police, who carried out a search of the area. Marsh was found on Union Street, Blackheath, and was subsequently arrested. He was charged with 48 counts of theft, assaulting a police constable, and breaching a community order. Marsh appeared at Wolverhampton Magistrate Court, where he was sentenced to 36 weeks in prison. He was also handed a 3-year criminal behaviour order. PC Christopher Wickett of the Sandwell Retail Crime Team said the impact of the offending was felt by both businesses and their staff. "Behind every theft Marsh committed are staff and businesses which have been forced to bear the burden of his offending. We hope that this provides reassurance to businesses that we will continue to take robust action against those who target our community." Man is cleared of rape and running brothel. A man accused of raping a woman and conspiring to run a brothel in Smethwick has been cleared of the offences he faced. Leonardo Stingachu of Darlaston stood trial at Wolverhampton Crown Court, accused of 3 counts of rape relating to the same woman, 1 count of keeping a brothel for prostitution and 1 count of conspiring to control prostitution for gain from November 2020 to June 2021. However, following deliberations, the jury found the defendant, aged 36, not guilty on all counts. On Tuesday afternoon, after his defence counsel said that some of the women's allegations were bizarre and that her version of events did not stack up. The court also heard there was no prosecution evidence to prove that the defendant from Moxley and others involved in the alleged operation at the property in Park Road, Smethwick, were related to each other. The woman, who cannot be publicly named, claimed the people involved were cousins from Romania. She told officers that Stingachu had slapped her, causing injuries when she stayed with him at the address in Arden Road, and that she and other sex workers racked up earnings of around £3,000 a night for the operators. Opinion by Dr. Roshan Doug. Time to stop lecturing India and instead to start learning from it. Are we in the UK still seeing this vast, complex country through a colonial lens? Supporting this article is a picture of a number of men and women wearing traditional saris, and they are waving the Indian flag, which has horizontal stripes of orange, white and green, with a star in the middle. If I asked you to imagine India, I think you would think of poverty, pollution and traffic. With many people, it's almost a reflex, a remnant of the colonial past. Never mind that India has sent a spacecraft to the moon, become the world's fourth largest economy, pioneers of the world's most sophisticated digital payment systems, and is producing some of the brightest scientists, engineers, CEOs and entrepreneurs on the planet. For many outsiders, India is still frozen somewhere in the 1970s. Now don't get me wrong, India has poverty, it has pollution, it has traffic that makes the M6 a rush hour look positively relaxing. But reducing a nation of 1.4 billion people to these clichés is a bit like judging Britons entirely by drizzle, potholes and homelessness. This weekend, on August the 15th, India celebrates Independence Day less than 80 years after emerging from the Raj. It's become one of the defining powers of the 21st century. That is one of the greatest national transformations in modern history. As someone brought up in Britain to parents who came here in the late 1950s, I spent my life between two cultures. Britain gave me an excellent education, a career and opportunity for which I am grateful. But growing up, I also absorbed the idea of civilization somehow began in Greece, popped over to Rome and then sailed to Britain on a ferry called the Renaissance. India barely gets a mention, not even as a footnote, despite being home to one of the world's oldest continuous civilizations. Earlier this year, I travelled to India on a business trip, which coincided with the conference on artificial intelligence in Delhi. Now, what struck me wasn't simply the technology, it was the confidence. Here was a country embracing innovation without feeling the need to apologize for its history or culture. That confidence has survived centuries of invasions, empires and colonial rule. India's language, philosophies, skills, traditions and customs endured because ordinary families refused to let them disappear. It also explains India's respect for learning. Long before Oxford or Cambridge existed, the Lander University welcomed scholars from across Asia. Learning was part and parcel of life, so was spirituality. For example, the Sanskrit word for vidya means more than education. It speaks of wisdom, character and lifelong pursuit of knowledge of physical and metaphysical worlds. Sometimes I wonder whether we've lost a little of that in Britain, where education is increasingly measured by grades, certificates and salaries rather than real wisdom. There's another irony. Cultural appropriation has caught on. Yoga is everywhere. Meditation has become mindfulness. Ancient Indian ideas have become multi-billion dollar industries, often without much acknowledgement of where they came from. Now, cultural exchange is wonderful, but cultural amnesia is less admirable. Outsiders, including fashion brands like Prada, Ralph Lauren and Louis Vuitton, need to give credit where credit is due. It's only fair. None of this means India is beyond criticism. It has inequality, pollution, crime, etc. Democracy, after all, is a shared human habit of imperfection, a work in progress, and let's not forget, Britain has its own problems too. Issues re the cost of living, border controls, and the need to balance individual freedom on one hand and national security on the other are ongoing political concerns. We don't enjoy being judged solely by our worst headlines, neither should India. So we should be careful about double standards. India's problems are often treated as civilizational flaws, whilst Western problems are described as challenges or complex issues. Our concerns somehow become world problems, but India's concerns are their problems, something for them to sort out. I believe India has done remarkably well in the short time of its independence. It has built satellites, software companies, fast-growing economy, whilst remaining rooted in a Hindu civilization that stretches back thousands of years before any of the Abrahamic religions came into being. That combination, modern ambition and ancient continuity, is rare. In fact, it's unique. As somebody who loves both Britain and India, I don't see this as a competition. Each has strengths the others could learn from. Perhaps that's the real lesson. Most of all, we need to remember that modernity doesn't require a country to abandon its civilization or cultural identity. India has shown it can compete in the modern world whilst remaining rooted in ancient traditions and customs. So this Independence Day, instead of asking what India could learn from the West, perhaps we should ask a different set of questions. What has the West forgotten that India still remembers? How is it that after centuries of invasions, India has managed to preserve its religious traditions, respect for learning and cultural identity? And perhaps, just as importantly, are we still seeing this vast, complex country through a colonial lens and defining it by an outdated bunch of clichés?
Hi, this is Debbie with some articles from the Express and Star from the 13th of August. Cars seized in cruising crackdown. Vehicles confiscated in street racing blitz by Kirsty Louise Card. This article is accompanied by a colour photograph of a blue car which is slightly out of focus as if it's moving at speed. The caption reads, "Roads were targeted around region in police operation on street racing." Police have seized dozens of vehicles and tackled street racing in a special operation across the West Midlands. West Midlands Police carried out Operation Hercules, targeting roads across the West Midlands, including Dudley and Birmingham, and seizing vehicles for breaching a street cruising injunction during an operation across the region. Officers across the force also came together to prevent disruption and crime after police received information of a large meet-up that could cause significant disruption to communities. During the operation at the weekend, a Lamborghini was seized after the driver failed to stop for officers. A number of other cars were also seized and 18 fines were issued for offences including having no insurance, speeding, using a mobile phone whilst driving, going through a red light and driving a car in a dangerous condition. Sergeant Aidan Brown from Operation Hercules said, "The shutdown didn't happen. This should be a serious reminder to people who think it's okay to come to the West Midlands and carry out illegal street racing that we will take action. These meetups are not worth your car being seized, the potential driving ban or causing serious injury to an innocent member of the public." Five charged as part of County Line's inquiry. Five men have been charged following a series of police warrants carried out across Dudley and Sandwell as part of an investigation into a suspected County Lines drug network. Officers from the County Lines Task Force carried out searches at five addresses on Tuesday as part of an investigation into the DAPA drugs line. During the searches, officers recovered more than £35,000 in cash, mobile phones believed to be linked to drug dealing, knives, imitation firearms and ammunition. Five men were arrested and have been charged. Nafis Rashid, 25, has been charged with being concerned in the supply of crack cocaine and heroin. Mohammed Yasser Khan, 23, has been charged with being concerned in the supply of crack cocaine and heroin, possession of Class A drugs with intent to supply, and possession of criminal property. Ayaz Shafiq, 18, has been charged with being concerned in the supply of crack cocaine and heroin. Alex Rennie, 38, has been charged with being concerned in the supply of crack cocaine and heroin, possession of ammunition without a certificate, and possession of component parts of ammunition with intent to manufacture. Alex Nock, 37, has been charged with being concerned in the supply of crack cocaine and heroin. Glaive thrilled to be crowned Sprint King by Matt Meyer. This article is accompanied by a colour photograph of a man in a GB running outfit wearing a crown and holding a gold medal. Romel Glaive celebrates after winning gold in the men's 100-metre final. Europe's new sprint king, Romel Glaive, declared total domination for Great Britain in the 100 metres after winning gold at Birmingham 2026. The 26-year-old led home teammate Jeremiah Azu in a 1-2 for the home nation at Alexander Stadium. Glaive's win came just 24 hours after Amy Hunt won gold in the women's 100 metres on Monday. Asked about GB's performance in the event, he replied, "It is domination, total domination." Azu was ahead at the halfway point, but Glaive, who wore sunglasses for every round of competition, powered home to victory. Former Olympic champion and many people's race favourite Marcel Jacobs pulled up midway through. Glaive, who finished third in the last European Championships 2 years ago, became the sixth British man to win the title. He said, "Upgrading from a bronze medal from 2024 is an amazing feeling. The aim was to get British 1, 2 and 3, but we got 1, 2, which is also amazing. I was ready for this occasion. The last week or so has been up and down with my body, but I was able to come out here regardless of how I was feeling." Glaive wore a crown on his head during the celebrations and was still in the stadium more than half an hour after the race, taking selfies with fans. He continued, "At the start of the season, my main objective was to be the King of Europe, because last time I came third. I wasn't really happy with that placing. Watching the race back from 2024, I was gutted with myself. It was my first international 2 years ago. 2 years on, I'm a different athlete now. My mindset is to that elite level, and to win this European Championship, it is an amazing feeling. When I woke up, mentally, I was ready to win this gold medal. I just needed to trust in my coach, what he told me to do, and keep working on a few things at the start of the race. I was dreaming about it." Azu was left to wonder what might have been, though he claimed to be happy enough with silver, Germany's Owen Ansa third. He said, "I don't even know what the time was, but it doesn't matter. Even if I had run 10.3, I got the silver medal at the end of the day. I got out well. It would have been nice to be next to Rommel, as I think he got out well too. It's hard to gauge. I haven't even seen the race back yet, so I've no idea what's happened, but I felt to myself I got out well and held the speed well." On this day, August the 13th, 1704, the Battle of Blenheim took place in Germany, in which Anglo-Austrian forces under Marlborough and Prince Eugene defeated the French and Bavarian armies. 1888, John Logie Baird, electrical engineer who helped pioneer television, was born in Helensburgh, Dumbartonshire. 1889, the coin-operated phone was patented in the USA by William Gray of Hartford, Connecticut. 1899, Alfred Hitchcock, English film director who became a US citizen in 1955, was born. He made the first British sound film, Blackmail, 1929, although dialogue only began in reel two, as the studio was not equipped in the early sequences. He made many films, including Rebecca in 1940 and Psycho in 1960. 1910, death of Florence Nightingale, the lady with the lamp during the Crimean War. 1915, Brides in the Bath murderer George Joseph Smith, who drowned his brides in a zinc bath after ensuring their finances were set up in his favour, was hanged. It was Friday the 13th. 1961, East German border guards stopped cars passing to the east through the Brandenburg Gate, thus sealing the border and preventing an exodus to the west. Barbed wire was erected, later to be replaced by the Berlin Wall. 1964. The last hangings in Britain took place. Peter Allen in Walton Prison, Liverpool, and John Walby at Strangeways, Manchester. 1997. The first episode of South Park aired on Comedy Central. On this day last year, fashion accessories chain Claire's appointed administrators for its UK and Ireland business, putting around 2,150 jobs at risk. The US parent firm for the high street retailer said it filed a formal notice to administrators from advisory firm Interpath.
This is Lauren with some stories from the Express and Star from the 14th of August. Plans to add more houses to estate. Plans to add more plots to a 105-home estate in Wensbury have been approved. Sandor Council has given permission to housing developer Persimmon to build a further 18 homes on land on the edge of its latest estate off Friar Park Road in Wensbury. The land, which is also a protected site of local importance to nature conservation, was intended to remain as mostly woodland, with a new children's play area and a balancing pond in the plans approved by Sandor Council in 2024. The new and updated plans submitted by Persimmon in October last year showed a smaller children's play area would be moved to another location nearer to the Elm Tree Primary Academy. Persimmon already had permission to build 84 homes on the playing fields after plans were given the green light by Sandor Council in 2020, but the developer later returned in 2023 with larger proposals. Woodland, which had been expected to be retained and protected, was cleared by the developer before the planning application for the extra homes was submitted. A handful of objections were made against the work, saying the homes were being squeezed into the space. One objection said, "The original proposal, although not ideal, was accepted because it retained the substantial belt of trees, including appropriate open space and a well-sized play area." More than 100 people to join MP in walk following rape attack, written by Mark Andrews. More than 100 people joined an MP for a walk to reclaim a Black Country beauty spot in a show of defiance after a woman was raped. West Bromwich MP Sarah Coombs led the walk across the town's Sandor Valley after being told that many no longer felt safe in the park. She was joined by police officers, council representatives and women's groups for the 25-minute walk, which she hoped would increase the public's confidence to enjoying the area. "We, the community of West Bromwich, will not allow this terrible crime to stop us from using the park we love," she said. Last month, more than 60 residents turned out for a meeting organised by Miss Coombs to share their experiences and concerns about safety in the park, following the broad daylight attack on June 29th. Miss Coombs said the walk, which started from the visitor centre, taking participants on a loop through the woods, would form part of a wider campaign to reclaim the valley. She said she was also calling for action on antisocial behaviour and litter. Miss Coombs said she felt strongly about ensuring the park remains safe for women and girls who were disproportionately at risk from experiencing sexual violence. "It is essential that Sandor's parks and green spaces feel safe for everyone, and especially for women and girls," she said. "At our community meeting in July, I heard loud and clear that residents are concerned by rising antisocial behaviour and safety concerns. I'm taking these issues seriously and want to help residents reclaim Sandor Valley from those who are perpetrating violence or acting in a careless, inconsiderate and unlawful way." Alongside this article is a picture of Sarah Coombs and a crowd of people. They are holding a large white banner with the words "Reclaim the Valley" written or painted on. "Reclaim that" is in green and "Valley" is in a deep purple. People in the crowd are holding smaller signs, smaller pieces of paper with the same lettering on. It's captioned, "MP Sarah Coombs led the walk across the town's Sandor Valley after being told many no longer felt safe." The Archers celebrate 75th anniversary with live show, written by Alexandra Taylor, your world contributor. Fans of BBC Radio 4's The Archers will have the chance to step inside the world of Ambridge when a special live show arrives in Birmingham as part of the drama's 75th anniversary celebrations. The Archers, live at 75, will come to Symphony Hall on Wednesday, September 9th, as part of a UK tour running from June to November 2026. Hosted by award-winning comedian and Archers fan Angela Barnes, the production will bring the much-loved radio drama out of the studio and onto the stage, featuring live performances, behind-the-scenes stories, and a look at how the fictional village of Ambridge is created. The Birmingham performance will feature Charles Collingwood, brackets Brian Aldridge, Ryan Kelly, Jasmine McCreary, Susie Riddle, Tracy Horobin, and Sonny Ormond, Lillian Bellamy, alongside live sound effects specialist Vanessa Nuttall. set around a reimagined Ambridge flower and produce show. The evening will include specially written scenes performed with live Foley sound effects, archive material from the BBC vaults, audience questions, an interactive pub quiz, and a sing-along to the programme's famous theme tune. First broadcast on January 1, 1951, The Archers is the world's longest running radio drama and has become a much loved part of British culture, following the everyday lives, relationships, and challenges of residents in the fictional village. Charles Collingwood, who plays Brian Aldridge, said he was looking forward to celebrating the milestone with fans. He said, "My character Brian would never want to go on tour. He would find it a distraction. I, however, am longing to celebrate the Archers' 75th anniversary with enthusiastic vigour." See tomorrow's ENS weekend for a full interview. Alongside this article is a image from a live show. It is zoomed in onto a section of the stage where there are different tables set up, all with gingham tablecloths on. There is a woman producing Foley sound effects, so she has a bowl and a spoon, shaving cream and a sponge, lots of boxes, different utensils and microphones around her. And clearly she is creating the sounds used for the radio drama. It's captioned, "The performances include specially written scenes for the tour." Students make grade and are recognised for their dedication. Education bosses sing the praises of young learners after another strong set of A-level results across the region. Written by Dan Stacey. Students across the West Midlands have celebrated their A-level and post-16 results, with schools and colleges reporting strong performances and securing places at universities, apprenticeships and further training. Among those celebrating were the Sandor College Group, which described this year's performance as its best ever, and King Edward VI College in Stourbridge, which recorded a 99.5% A-level pass rate across 3,581 entries. There were smiles at Central St Michael's Sixth Form in West Bromwich as students collected their results, with CEO and Principal Lisa Kappa, MBE, describing the college's performance as its best ever. "It's very exciting here," she said. "We've got the best ever A-level results. We improved last year and we've improved again this year across a wider range of courses." Miss Kappa said the Sixth Form had developed a distinctive university-style environment, giving students the opportunity to study in what she described as a more grown-up setting. Yesterday also saw individual celebrations at Sandor College, including for Tia Satchel-Thompson. Tia received the Pupil of the Year award after achieving a distinction in Level 3 childcare and education. She has secured a place at Heybridge Teaching School, where she will study primary teaching. The college has also used Results Day to underline the importance of vocational and technical education. Miss Kappa spoke positively about new government plans to put technical education on a more equal footing with academic qualifications, saying the country needed to develop higher level technical skills. Dan Mason, principal at Ormiston SUB Academy, said, "Today is a celebration of our students' ambition, perseverance and commitment. They have worked incredibly hard to reach this point, and these results are a testament to their efforts, as well as the unwavering support of our staff and the wider school community." Lisa Mason, principal at Ormiston Forge Academy in Cradley Heath, said, "I'm delighted to see our students rewarded for the dedication they've shown over the past 2 years. Their achievements are well deserved and reflect not only their hard work, but the positive relations they've built with staff and one another."
Hello, this is Pam with some articles from the Express and Star, Saturday the 15th of August. Devastation. Prime Minister sees aftermath of huge wildfire which destroyed 19 homes and left 18 damaged. A huge wildfire in the Black Country completely destroyed 19 homes and damaged a further 18, fire chiefs have revealed. The cause of the fire in Stourbridge, which has been described as apocalyptic, is still unknown. The Prime Minister visited the town yesterday and said that he had never seen scenes like this in Britain, where you just see a whole house gutted, smouldering. Speaking at the scene of Thursday's blaze, West Midlands Fire Service Chief Fire Officer Simon Toohill said one firefighter was taken to hospital but has since been discharged, with a further five people suffering minor injuries, including smoke inhalation. He said yesterday, at the height of this multi-agency response, more than 100 firefighters, 30 fire appliances and 11 specialist teams were in attendance. He said the fire spread rapidly and 19 homes had been fully destroyed while a further 18 were damaged. Mr. Toohill told reporters that local farmers ploughed fields next to houses, which prevented the blaze from spreading to other nearby buildings. The incident covered an area of approximately 500 acres, he said. Six casualties were reported, including three firefighters. One of the firefighters attended hospital and has since been discharged. I'm delighted to say I spoke to her this morning and she is fine and well. He added, the cause of the fire is not yet known. Specialist fire investigators are working hard to establish the circumstances. The Stourbridge blaze was one of several severe fires in the Black Country on Thursday. Fires also broke out in Willenhall and Oldbury, with many homes evacuated and some properties destroyed. Prime Minister Andy Burnham revealed he had called in the military, announced a ban on disposable barbecues, and said plans were being drawn up for emergency financial support for fire services battling the fires. And this article is accompanied by a big picture from the air of seven quite large houses in a cul-de-sac. There seems to be two of them undamaged out of that number, and the rest of them are partially burnt, like severely partially burnt. And behind them is what looks like a road with trees, and the whole thing is covered in ash. It almost looks like there's been snow, a light dusting of snow over everything. It's grey and white and burnt, awful. Sadly, Birmingham 2026 feels like a real opportunity missed. Behind the headlines with Chief Sports Writer and Sports Journalist of the Year, Matt Mayer. Whatever happens this weekend, it will be hard for Birmingham 2026 to shake the image of empty seats. Organisers who remain upbeat despite the negative publicity surrounding low attendances, even declaring themselves delighted with ticket sales, are confident of a strong finish and a packed out Alexander Stadium, bringing the championship to a close. It is true numbers have been trending in the right direction through the week, with the crowd which watched Amy Hunt win her second European gold on Thursday, easily the largest so far. There is a sense, however, of it all being just a little bit too little, too late. The damage has already been done. It is bad news for British athletics. Just at the moment, the country is bidding to bring the World Championships to London in 2029. Like it or not, it is also bad news for Birmingham and the West Midlands, with complaints about ticket prices, food costs and transport opening up the region to the kind of lazy, stereotypical slurs for which it has long been an easy target. For evidence, look no further than the report in Thursday's Guardian on Matt Hudson-Smith's 400-metre gold medal, the high point of the week from a Midlands perspective. Musing on the reasons for the low crowds, the writer compared Birmingham to its most recent predecessors as European Championships hosts, Rome, Munich, Berlin and Amsterdam. As one press box wag put it, Rome has the Colosseum, Birmingham has the Bullring. Oh, the hilarity. Clearly not even the proudest Brummie could claim their much younger, city has the monuments to compare with those aforementioned continental tourist hotspots, but neither is the West Midlands an artistic and cultural desert. Ever heard of Ozzy Osbourne? Canals? William Shakespeare? In any case, the picture of Birmingham as a not-so-alluring destination flies in the face of what journalists present at the stadium have witnessed. While it might only be anecdotal evidence, the overwhelming sense is the one thing these championships haven't struggled to attract is visitors from overseas. Conservative estimates claimed more than 2,000 Irish supporters were present to watch Mark English win their first ever European gold on Thursday, while impromptu parties involving Swiss fans and medal winners, there have been rumours of sponsors giving out free beer, have been a regular sight on the journey out of the arena at night. From the French and the Dutch on the buses to the Germans and Finns in the local pubs, Birmingham 2026 has not lacked for foreign interest. Instead, it's the locals who are missing. It is the residents of the city and the region itself to whom these championships have failed to cut through, a stark contrast to the extended celebration of the Commonwealth Games 4 years ago. This is where ticket prices might have been a factor, whilst it is also true the process of actually getting to the Alexander Stadium is not so easy as 4 years ago. Back then, public transport was free for the day with your event ticket. This time, using a shuttle bus requires an extra charge, while the £22.50 fee for using the park and ride scheme is among several costs which require some explaining. There's also no getting away from the fact things have not exactly changed for the better since 2022. Birmingham Council is bankrupt, the city's bin strike is approaching its 18-month anniversary, and the cost of living crisis is biting harder than ever. All the same, it has been surprising just how many people in the past few days have claimed they did not even know the championships were taking place. It is also true, for all the attention on pricing, it is often the cheaper seats which have not sold. Those who already love athletics appear happy to pay top dollar. It's the casual fans who have stayed away. That feels like a failure of marketing. It is certainly curious the city centre fan zone in Centenary Square, complete with its screen showing the action, only opened on Thursday. Why not sooner? Organisers struggle to say, though reading between the lines it was tough to escape the suspicion, it all came down to costs. A notable lack of signage around the city advertising the championships may also be for the same reason. In defence of the organisers, they might have expected a bit more help from elsewhere. Andy Burnham obviously has far bigger issues to deal with, but this is a major and historic international event, the first ever European Championships happening on UK soil. A short tweet celebrating the fact surely couldn't have been too hard. Culture Secretary Lisa Nandy did attend Tuesday's session with West Midlands Mayor Richard Parker, but didn't find the event worthy of a social media post. You can't help think things might have been different had the championships been taking place nearer her Wigan base, somewhere like, say, Manchester. It all feels rather a shame. No question athletics will have benefited from the exposure on BBC TV in what is a relatively quiet sporting week before the football season gets up and running. The sport itself has been fun, Amy Hunt announcing herself as new star of British athletics and Hudson Smith delivering on his home stage. Those moments will have been exciting enough to inspire some youngsters, whether watching at home or in person. Yes, it all could have been so much better. Right now, it feels like an opportunity missed. Tributes pour in following death of former MP Snape. Lord Snape, who served as the MP of West Bromwich East, has passed away at the age of 84. Peter Snape was a well-known politician who represented the interests of West Bromwich on the national stage for 27 years in his capacity as an MP. He served as the local MP from 1974 up until 2001. The current MP for West Bromwich, Sarah Coombs, paid tribute to Mr. Snape, stating that he will be missed. In a statement posted on social media, Sarah Coombs said, "Very sad to hear of the passing of Peter Snape. Peter is still very well loved in the area. I've had more than a few conversations that went, Peter Snape, best MP we ever had. He'll be much missed." Opinion with Toby Neal. Severe weather that means trains can't run, but cars can. Failing older carriages means you have to get behind the wheel to be somewhere. A friend was thinking of going by train to Aber Dyfi on Wednesday, or, if you prefer, Aber Dyfi. He'd left his hoodie on a bench by the beach and wanted to get it back. "Yes, I know, but people do get attached to particular items of clothing. I had a wonderful camouflage jacket, which my wife made me get rid of." All this sartorial diversion is besides the point, which is that my pal was unable to travel to the coast to retrieve his hoodie because the train services were cancelled due to severe weather. On Thursday, Transport for Wales daytime services going into Mid Wales were being cancelled again. "We're unable to run our older trains during periods of high temperatures due to ongoing failures with the air conditioning systems of our legacy fleet," their website says. So if you've been wanting to travel from, say, Wolverhampton to have a day out on the Welsh coast, you've had to drive or not go at all. To be fair, I used to think air conditioning in Britain was a bit of a joke, and on cars was an expensive and unnecessary luxury when you could simply open a window. Not anymore. Falling water levels in the Danube at Budapest have revealed a Second World War motorcycle with the remains of two soldiers, which the Daily Telegraph described as Nazi skeletons. One of them was in the SS, so will have been a Nazi, but the other might simply have been a German without ideology who was fighting for his country, in which case describing him as a Nazi is a slur on his memory, and he might not even have been German either. A new scientific study has found that dogs can understand human expressions. I'm not particularly surprised, as it works in reverse, as humans can understand dog expressions, at least to an extent. You know when they're happy or angry. Talking about angry dogs, we had a delivery lad come to the door during the week, and he was greeted by the normal explosive reaction from our Chihuahua, Rocky. Defensive aggressive, they call it. We might try another behaviourist sometime. It would be the third. After this new piece of scientific research, I think I'm going to advise people to try smiling at him. The delivery lad was so impressed by Rocky's reaction that he got out his mobile phone and filmed him through the door glass, smiling at him as he did so. But in truth, this did not have any noticeable calming effect. I think it might go viral. Underneath it all, he's a nice dog, really, I assure you. I tried the colander thing, but can't have followed the instructions correctly. Never mind, there's always next time. The ballot paper for the Clacton by-election was almost 3 feet long. For younger readers who only understand metric, that's just under a yard. With over 30 candidates, you can't say the voters had no choice. There were no fewer than 3 from the raving loony spectrum alone. Nick the Incredible Flying Brick, Baron von Thunderclap, and Howling Lord Hope. An embarrassment of riches indeed. Or, if not riches, just an embarrassment.
Hello, this is Jenny. I hope this finds you well. The following articles from the Express and Star newspaper, Monday the 17th of August. Warning over dangerous scam involving card payments. Consumer magazine says victims are being tricked into approving payments. Concerns about a dangerous scam where victims are being tricked into approving card payments have been raised by a consumer group. which warned that criminals may use similar tactics to those used in authorised push payments, APP, scams, which involve people being manipulated into making a bank transfer. Many authorised scams involve people sending money to fraudsters directly from their bank accounts, but Which is concerned that fraudsters are also cashing in by convincing victims to approve card payments. The consumer group described it as a critical wake-up call after years of security efforts being focused on fighting fraud involving bank transfers. It said that while unauthorised card fraud, where spending happens without the cardholder's authorisation or knowledge, is generally refunded, and victims of APP fraud have the protections of a reimbursement scheme, some people who are manipulated into approving card payments to scammers may face more of a hurdle to get their money back. If someone authorises a card payment directly to a retailer or trader, they may later discover is a scammer. They may be able to use methods such as chargeback or Section 75 to get a refund. But Which warned that people may struggle to claim for payments they have authorised to a legitimate company, even if the money ultimately ends up in the hands of a criminal. It is said card fraud victims can end up in a devastating situation, as the company has provided the intended services, albeit as part of a chain of fraud. Which said the chargeback and Section 75 refund mechanisms are primarily designed for unauthorised charges or issues such as non-delivery, faulty goods and misrepresentation. Meanwhile, APP fraud, which has been under the spotlight in recent years, happens when people are tricked into transferring money to criminals for a variety of reasons, such as impersonation fraud, purchase scams, romance scams and investment scams. In October 2024, mandatory APP fraud reimbursement rules came into force. The rules mean that banks must reimburse APP fraud victims unless the customer has been grossly negligent. The protections apply when a transfer is made to and from a UK bank account, and a reimbursement limit of £85,000 has been applied under the rules, although banks can choose to go further than this and repay higher amounts. Which said that, like APP fraud, authorised card payments can also be a feature of romance scams, investment scams, and criminals impersonating banks. Lisa Webb, a consumer law expert at Which, said, "This is a particularly dangerous scam since card payments fall outside of the automatic refunds that banks are obliged to provide for authorised push payments. Fraudsters typically cold call victims while posing as bank security staff, the police or the financial regulator, claiming the account is under attack and urging them to approve card payments or share one-time codes to block or reverse the supposed fraud. Always raise a claim with your card provider and escalate to the Financial Ombudsman Service if needed, providing full details of how you were manipulated into approving the payments." Which said a typical scenario may start with a cold call from a fraudster pretending to be from a bank security team, the police or a regulator. They tell the victim their account is under attack. People may be asked to move money to a safe account they hold with a different bank if, for example, the criminal believes that provider has weaker controls. Scammers may have already stolen the victim's card details and other data through phishing or a data breach. They may trigger payments and ask the victim to approve them in their app, pretending that this will stop the fraud attempts. They may also manipulate the victim into sharing one-time passcodes to add the card to their own digital wallet and go on a spending spree. Which is calling on account providers to step up defences and publish further industry data on card fraud. Medals delayed as police make arrest. An article by Tom Hall. Amy Hunt and Dina Asher-Smith were among the athletes left stuck at the Alexander Stadium on Saturday night after a police incident suspended transport operations at the European Championships in Birmingham. Organisers later confirmed in a statement that event transport was paused in order to carry out security measures, while West Midlands police arrested a man in his 30s on suspicion of fraud. It is understood the athletes still left on site, including the British men's and women's 4x100 relay teams, who had won gold in the final two events of the penultimate evening session, were sent back to the High Performance Centre next to the venue. When transport services did resume about 1 hour and 45 minutes later, those competing on Sunday were prioritised. They include Hunt, who had, that night, collected her third medal of the Games. There was a heavy police presence outside the 23,000 capacity stadium, which had been near capacity, and huge static queues of spectators waiting for shuttle buses, some of whom took to social media to complain about the lack of information. It was also understood the decision to cancel six medal ceremonies due to take place between 10 p.m. and 11 p.m. was related to the police incident. A Birmingham 2026 statement issued in the early hours of yesterday morning read, "Birmingham 2026 can confirm that transport operations have returned to normal following a police incident on Saturday evening. Championship transport was suspended until the necessary security measures had been carried out, whilst West Midlands Police arrested a man in his 30s on suspicion of fraud. The safety of our spectators, athletes, workforce and the wider Championships family will always be our first priority. We recognise that the delays presented challenges for those affected and would like to thank everyone for their patience, understanding and cooperation throughout the evening. Further information will be issued on Sunday relating to the evening's postponed medal ceremonies. No explanation was offered for what was happening outside the exit, but there was no indication anyone remaining at the venue was in any danger." Motorcyclist in his 30s dies in Black Country road collision. An appeal has been launched by police after a motorbike rider died following a collision on a Samwell Road. West Midlands police said it had been called to Poke Lane in Rowley Regis on Saturday morning and found a man in his 30s who had sustained serious injuries and was confirmed to have died at the scene. The force has now launched an appeal to ask for help with the investigation into the crash, including the identity of the driver of a white Toyota Prius. A spokesman for West Midlands Police said, "We're appealing for information after a motorcyclist has died following a collision in Sandwell. We were called to Poke Lane near the junction of Yew Tree Lane, Rowley Regis, at just after 8:45 p.m. A man in his 30s sustained serious injuries and was sadly confirmed dead at the scene. Our thoughts are with his loved ones at this devastating time. It's understood the rider struck a number of vehicles before coming off his bike. We've spoken to some of the drivers, but there are others we still need to trace. We're keen to hear from anyone who was in the area at the time and saw the blue motorbike. There was a white Toyota Prius travelling along Poke Lane and the driver could assist their investigation. We'd ask anyone with dashcam footage to contact us. You can do this via live chat on our website or by calling 101 and quote log 4904 of the 15th of the 8th, 26. You can also email investigators at sciu@westmidlands.police.uk. "Mowat was going to be my captain, admits boss Mozza," an article by Lewis Cox. James Morrison revealed the challenge of losing midfield glue Alex Mowat just days before Albion's championship opener at Norwich. The Baggy shrugged off the unexpected blow of Mowat's sale to Derby, completed on Friday for around £700,000 with a superb 2-1 win at Carrow Road. But preparations were struck dramatically as Mowat's move to the East Midlands escalated late on Wednesday and Thursday. Mowat made his Derby debut as a substitute in Saturday's 2-1 defeat at Charlton, where briefly came up against ex-Baggies colleague Carlin Grant. Morrison confirmed he had been due to name long-serving Mowat, 31, Albion's club captain, an honour given instead to George Campbell, and said all of Albion's preparation for the Norwich opener and for much of pre-season had been with the experienced Mowat, a key man. "I didn't expect it, but that's football," Morrison told the Express and Star. "I can see why he was sold. I can see why Alec took the security of a 2-year deal as well. Yet you have to get over it pretty quickly. It's the connection you have with him, what he was like in the dressing room. He's been here a number of years and he's been a good servant. He was probably the glue in pre-season, knitting it together, but it's a good opportunity for us to progress in that position." Morrison added, "I think it was more of the timing, wasn't it? We did all the work, all the prep. We had Thursday off, so all the prep was already done, and then you have to regroup and tinker." The Baggies boss admitted he understands the move from all perspectives, but could not hide the blow of losing Mowat, who was an influence in the dressing room. The former Barnsley man had just 1 year left on his contract at the Hawthorns and was one of the club's big earners. Asked if he had much of a say in Mowat moving on, Morrison added, "Did I have a say? I can see both sides, the business side and the player's side. And from my side of really putting the work into him. And I know what a good player he is and how he is in the dressing room. I had my eyes on him to make him club captain. But I'm happy. It's part of football, isn't it? You've got to deal with it. Welcome to management. As simple as that." New recruit Felix Horn-Meyer started in place of Mowat at Carrow Road. The Norwegian was given the nod over Jason Malumbi, who impressed from the bench. Morrison confirmed he would like to replace Mowat. He said, "I would like to bring in another one to replace Alex, so we'll be waiting to do that." Councillor proud at spirit shown in aftermath. An article by Lisa O'Brien. New pictures and video footage shows the aftermath of a fire at a former Black Country golf course. Nearly 100 homes were evacuated as a second fire in as many days hit the former Brandhall golf course in Oldbury on Thursday evening. Two homes in a nearby street were also destroyed. Large areas of land have been left scorched and blackened. The fire service remained at the scene on Saturday afternoon. Sandwell Council said there were no casualties and thanked the emergency services and council staff who responded and provided support to residents. The authority also thanked Our Lady and St Hubert's RC Church, which opened its doors to provide a place of safety and support. Proud councillor Thule Zeffi said he witnessed community spirit at its absolute best as neighbours in Oldbury came together. He said, "What I witnessed was community spirit at its absolute best." Meanwhile, two women, one aged 36 and one 56, are in custody after being arrested on suspicion of arson following a house fire in Penn. Crews were called to Mount Road on Friday evening, with a man and dog rescued from the property. Substantial damage was caused to the house, as well as to neighbours. West Midlands Police said it had arrested two women.
Now here's Kate with the final day's news from last Tuesday's paper.
Flags look a sorry sight 1 year on. They appeared overnight amid an outburst of patriotic fervour. As the area was gripped by a surge in national pride, the streets of the Black Country became lined with Union flags and St George's crosses. It's a year since Operation Raise the Colours began, first in the Birmingham suburb of Wheelie Castle, quickly spreading across the rest of the West Midlands and indeed the country as a whole. Groups of men in cherry pickers went around installing flags on lampposts, and before long the streets were lined with British and English flags. Reports of council officials removing the flags, they said it was to install new lighting, which only hardened their resolve, and many areas soon found themselves festooned with flags. In the Black Country, few areas were targeted more vigorously than Tipton. the 2 mile stretch from Five Ways through the centre of Prince's End and ending in the junction with Gospel Oak Road, quickly became a sea of red, white and blue, with the display continuing along Gospel Oak Road in the direction of Bilston. A year on, the display of national pride appears to be, well, flagging somewhat. The bright colours of 2025 have now faded somewhat and the flags look threadbare and forlorn. One particularly filthy and ragged looking example at the junction between Wensbury Oak and Gospel Oak Roads looks particularly pitiful as it droops from the lamppost. As some observers noted at the time, putting up the flags was the easy bit, but maintaining them and replacing them when they were worn requires a much longer commitment. While Tipton is a particularly visible example, there are plenty of other areas around the Black Country which have experienced a similar fate. At the famous Jigger Island in Brown Hills, Walsall Council decided to formalise the landmark and announced it would be installing its own flagpoles to create a managed site. But in other areas, cash-strapped councils have yet to find a solution which balances the wish of the residents to express their patriotism with the need to keep the neighbourhood safe and tidy. One thing is for sure, the dirty, ragged flags around Tipton today do little to instil a sense of local or national pride. And this article is supported by the sorry-looking flag in Tipton, which is the one described in the article at Wensbury Oak Road and Gospel Oak, and it's a junction there. And it's showing a really tall blue flagpole and a St George's cross flag. It's white with its red cross, but all along the edges it's all ripped and frayed and torn, and it's looking very, very sorry for itself, and it needs replacing. Robber is jailed for 19 years following a violent crime spree. A man will now serve nearly 2 decades behind bars following a violent crime spree targeting people, houses and businesses in Samwell and Birmingham in January. Anthony Mullins' offending began on January the 12th at around 12 p.m. when he broke into an address on Bearwood Road and stole a bank card before purchasing a new phone later the same day. A day later, he broke into a house on nearby Anderson Road at 2:20 p.m. by smashing the window with a plant pot to steal the spare keys to a car, gin and jewellery. Realising the car wasn't there, he returned hours later to steal a Kia from the drive and make his escape. His offending continued with further burglaries at businesses and people's homes and driving offences. On Tuesday the 20th of January, Mullen entered a bank on Bearwood Road, armed with a meat cleaver and demanded money from staff. Witnesses stated that he waved the weapon around in a threatening manner and told the staff not to use their panic alarms. However, one worker bravely pressed an emergency button and Mullen quickly grabbed an iPad before fleeing the scene. The following day, officers were on patrol around the Sandon Road area in Birmingham when they spotted Mullen. A 45-year-old was then detained and arrested on suspicion of 17 offences such as robbery, burglary, possession of a weapon and fraud, and was subsequently charged. Mullen, of no fixed address, appeared at Birmingham Crown Court on the 7th of August and was sentenced to 19 years in prison. PC Lucy Lee, Birmingham Neighbourhood Crime Team, said, Mullen was a dangerous criminal who committed a series of serious offences in just 10 days. Thanks to good local knowledge, officers were able to identify Mullen as the offender from CCTV footage and we were able to detain him. He will now be behind bars for a long period of time due to the violence and threats that were made during his crime spree. And this article is supported by a photograph of Anthony Mullen, and he was locked up for 19 years. Probe continues into street attack. A police investigation is ongoing into an incident where a man was left seriously injured after being assaulted. The incident happened in Upper High Street in Wensbury on Saturday night, with West Midlands Police saying a man in his 40s was assaulted and taken to hospital in a serious but stable condition. The force has asked for anybody with any information to get in touch as soon as possible. A spokesman for the West Midlands Police said, "We are investigating after a man was found with serious injuries on Upper High Street in Wednesbury. Officers were called at around 11:50 p.m. after a man in his 40s was assaulted. He was taken to hospital for treatment, where he remains in a serious but stable condition. We are reviewing CCTV footage and speaking to witnesses as part of our ongoing inquiries." Man injured in a hit-and-run crash. A man was taken to hospital after a hit-and-run in West Bromwich. Police were called to Old Meeting Street on Friday afternoon following the crash involving a car and a scooter. The scooter rider, a man, was taken to hospital with injuries which are not believed to be life-threatening or changing. However, the car made off and the police are trying to trace the car and the driver. A spokesman for West Midlands Police said, "We were called following a collision involving a scooter rider in a car on Old Meeting Street, West Bromwich, just after 3:40 p.m. A man was taken to hospital with injuries which are not believed to be life-threatening or changing. The vehicle made off and anyone with information which could help us trace the car and driver is asked to contact us via a live chat on our website or call 101 and quote log 3663 of 14/8/26. Boost for Charity as company hosts careers workshop. People supported by a Midlands charity have taken part in a day of careers and employability workshops at West Bromwich Building Society. Around 9 people from Jericho visited the Building Society's head office as part of an ongoing partnership between the two organisations. West Bromwich colleagues volunteered their time and expertise to deliver sessions covering career discovery, CV writing, interview skills, digital skills and financial education. The day ended with a careers talk from the Building Society's Chief Customer Officer, who spoke about his own career and opportunities within financial services. Those attending included people supported through Jericho's employment and recovery programmes, including the Equiano Project, which supports survivors of modern slavery through employment-focused recovery, education and personalised support. The workshops were designed to help build confidence, develop practical workplace skills and give participants a better understanding of what to expect when seeking employment. Georgia D. Esther, head of the marketing at West Brom Building Society, said, "It was a pleasure to welcome guests from Jericho to our head office."
That's the end of CD 1 for CD listeners, but we're going to side 2 now, and after the TV and radio listings, you will hear the quiz and other items of news from TNF and locally.
Some audio described TV programmes for the next week, along with radio programme highlights from Talking News Federation. Search for publications TNF Soundings to hear these directly on their website.
TNF Soundings.
The audio described television programmes for the week beginning Saturday the 22nd and ending Friday the 28th of August 2026, written by John and read by me, Demi. So for Saturday, start your day with drama and comedy. Channel 4 has 3 episodes of Everyone Loves Raymond starting at 8 a.m, followed by 3 episodes of Frasier starting at 9:25. Bargain Hunt is from Newark at 12 noon on BBC One. And if you missed the first part of Race Against the Tide, where competitors create fantastic sand castles before the tide comes in and reclaims the sand, the programme is repeated on BBC Two at 12:55. Homes Under the Hammer features properties in London, Newcastle and Nottingham. It's on BBC One at 2 p.m. The early evening film on BBC One is the family comedy Paddington. A Peruvian jungle bear arrives in London, but he catches the eye of a taxidermist. How he gets on is revealed at 7:15 p.m. The 1% Club is on ITV at 8:15 p.m. and the late-ish film on ITV One at 9:35 is the spy thriller Spectre. James Bond goes rogue in search of an elusive mastermind who may have links to Bond's own past. So, on to Sunday, 23rd. Bargain Hunt is from Southwell and is on BBC One at 11:30. There's a choice of films at 2:15. On BBC One, Sean has to rescue his farmer, who is using his sheep shearing skills to become a barber. What could possibly go wrong? That's Sean the Sheep, the movie, on BBC One at 2:15. Alternatively, on ITV One, follow James Bond as he searches for a British weapons system aboard a sunken vessel before it falls into the wrong hands. That's For Your Eyes Only. ITV One at 2:15. Wildlife cameraman Hamza Yassin goes in search of his top birds of prey in Hamza, Strictly Birds of Prey, on BBC One at 3:35. In 2018, the Fake or Fortune team investigated the authenticity of two sketchbooks thought to be the work of Toulouse-Lautrec. This programme reveals what has happened since. Fake or fortune? What happened next? That's on BBC Two at 5 p.m. ITV One has a documentary looking at the new extremes of heat and drought and how wildlife is adapting to these extremes. Force of Nature is on ITV One at 7. And it's the final of The Piano on Channel 4 at 9. Claudia, Mika and the six amateur pianists head for the final concert in Birmingham's Symphony Hall. Now, BBC Two has a shark theme this evening, starting with Blue Planet Revisited, A Shark's Tale. Steve Buckshall discovers why the Bahamas provide a sanctuary for sharks at 8. Then at 9, why sharks attack, investigating shark behaviour following three fatal attacks in Egypt. And this is followed by What Else But Jaws, the feature film, at 10. Now, a look at programmes that are on the same time each week. The following are on BBC One. Homes Under the Hammer at 11:15, Bargain Hunt 12:15, Escape to the Country at 2:45, and The Repair Shop at 3:30. Now, the other channels: Dickinson's Real Deal on ITV at 2, Animal Park on BBC Two at 2:45, Great Continental Railway Journeys is on BBC Two at 6:30, and two episodes of Heartbeat on ITV3 starting at 5:50 and 6:55 p.m. The soaps are EastEnders, BBC One at 7:30, Emmerdale, ITV1 at 8, all week, and Coronation Street, ITV1, 8:30, all week. Back to the weekdays, starting with Monday. Kelvin invites a leading chef to view his pigs in the hope he'll buy pork for his restaurant. That's Fletcher's Family Farm on ITV1 at 7:30. It's Monday, so that's quiz night on BBC Two, starting with Mastermind at 7:30 and then University Challenge at 8:30. The Apple Yards, a family of six, declutter their three-bedroomed home and remove half of their belongings to make way for a reorganised future, of course, in Sort Your Life Out with Stacey Solomon on BBC One at 8. Michael Sheen is in Rhiannon in North Wales, where locals are concerned about what they believe are high rates of cancer in the community. Buried with Michael Sheen is on BBC Two at 9. Now, what happened to Natasha and her sister Lerianne, who were left as babies less than 2 years apart at two South London hospitals? Find out in the last of the present series of Long Lost Family, Born Without Trace, What Happened Next, on ITV1 at 9. Bob and Paul head to a lake in the Surrey Hills and set their hearts on landing a big carp. Mortimer and Whitehouse, Gone Fishing, on BBC Two at 10. Now, on to Tuesday the 25th, the Sandcastle Challenge tonight is to create sand sculptures that reflect what is home to them, and all before the tide comes in. Race Against the Tide is on BBC Two at 7:30. The Great British Sewing Bee is all about the pop scene, with turning bedroom furnishings into outfits for pop artists, making 1970s disco outfits and cone bras in homage to Madonna. All will be revealed on BBC One starting at 8. Exhausted parents Kirsty and Oliver think a dog might be able to help wear out their 2-year-old toddler Stanley. Will the doghouse be able to help? Find out on Channel 4 at 8. A Mayday call is received from a yacht breaking up off the Norfolk coast. RNLI crews from Great Yarmouth and Galston race to the rescue in Saving Lives at Sea on BBC Two at 8. And to continue the life and death theme, the team strive to save Paul, whose leg has been severed after it was hit by a train, and they question a man with a deep wound who denies being stabbed. Emergency 24/7 is on BBC Two at 9. If you'd rather be cooking, follow the celebrities who are tasked with creating their own signature dish in Celebrity MasterChef on BBC One at 9. Now, Wednesday the 26th, Fiona, Bruce and Philip Mould have investigated the provenance of John Lennon's piano, now owned by Chesney Hawkes. But now, following new evidence from viewers, they investigate whether the visionary songwriter actually played it. Fake or Fortune, what happened next on BBC One at 8. Kirsty and Phil are in Whitley Bay visiting period properties and modern homes in Kirsty and Phil's Love It or List It Brilliant Builds on Channel 4 at 8 tonight. Alternatively, you could find out how the Warburton's factory in Bolton makes 1.4 million loaves of bread a week when Paddy McGuinness visits the factory where he once worked. Inside the Factory on BBC Two at 8. The second round of heats continues in MasterChef, with Zoe Ball challenging the celebrities to create their ultimate pudding. Find out how they get on at 9 p.m. on BBC One. Jasper is shocked when a murder occurs when he visits a retirement home with Zelda and her new boyfriend, Peter. Professor T on ITV One at 9. Ahead of the 25th anniversary of the 9/11 attacks on the Twin Towers, this programme from 2021 charts the events in the White House on that horrific day. 9/11, Inside the President's War Room, is on BBC Two at 9. Thursday, the 27th. Joel Dommett, Colin Murray and Susanna Reid all feature in It'll Be All Right on the Night on ITV One at 7:30. Nut and seed-based snacks, a gadget to tackle water waste, a mural installation business, and cricket clothing for women and girls are all looking for investment from the Dragon's Den on BBC One at 8. Also at 8, the 5 remaining would-be art dealers visit Margate to persuade local artists to work with them and sell their work at a pop-up art fair at Dreamland, the town's famous amusement park. The Big Deal with Steph McGovern is on BBC Two at 8. You've got 3 choices at 9. On BBC One, it's the second episode of Ludwig, a murder witnessed by an entire wedding party. Proves quite a puzzle. Will you be as overwhelmed as Ludwig by all the variables? Find out on BBC One at 9. BBC Two, David Olisoga continues the history of the Edinburgh House through time. And on Channel 5, a wealthy man claims a sun lounger as his kingdom for the day. Later he falls asleep, but he never wakes up. Benidorm is murder on Channel 5. And if you miss Jaws on Sunday, there's another chance to see it at 9 on BBC 4. And finally, Friday, 28th of August, the hunt is on for the killer of one of three actors shortlisted to play the next agent, Jonas Best. This is the first episode of the new series of Sister Boniface's Mysteries on BBC One at 2 p.m. Tom Kerridge challenges contestants for Celebrity MasterChef to make his favourite Michelin-starred recipes, giving advice, tips and pitfalls to help them. He is impressed by their wonderful interpretations. Find out if you agree in Celebrity MasterChef on BBC One at 8. Two polar bears need rescuing as their home at a wildlife park in Sweden is closing. Jimmy Doherty decides to relocate them to his farm in Suffolk. So begins his journey to create a suitable enclosure for them and transporting them from Sweden to the UK. Jimmy Doherty's Big Bear Rescue is on Channel 4 at 8. Retired archaeologist Judith Potts overhears the murder of her neighbour and with her friends, Susie and Bex, start their own investigation. The Marlowe Murder Club starts a new series on BBC Two at 9. And a new series of a US drama based on the novel from John Grisham. Rudy Baylor, who is fresh out of law school, takes on a medical malpractice case against the firm's managing partner. The Rainmaker. It's on ITV One at 9. And if you like a really late film, there's a biographical comedy drama on BBC One at 10 minutes past midnight. After they split with the Hollywood studios, Stan Laurel and Oliver Hardy embark on a tour of Britain's music halls. But with attendance low and Stan struggling to sell a new screenplay, old resentments flare up, threatening their friendship. Stan and Ollie on BBC One at 12:10. And there we are. We hope you find something of interest in this week's suggestions. Happy viewing.
DNF Soundings.
And now, the radio listings for the 7 days beginning Saturday the 22nd of August, compiled by Wendy and read by Gilly. And starting with Saturday, a reminder that the BBC Proms continues on Radio 3 this week, with programmes every evening. Today's prom is at 7:30 p.m. Marriott's Monologues is a 1991 programme with the late Dame Thora Heard reciting The Lion and Albert and The Return of Albert on Radio 4 Extra at 1:45 p.m. and 7:45 p.m. The Dancing Partner is Jerome K. Jerome's 1893 tale in which, when a group of young women complain about a lack of dance partners, a toy maker gets creative. Radio 4 Extra at 4:30 p.m. Moving on to Sunday the 23rd of August. In the first of a new series of The Reunion, the subject is the 1970 Isle of Wight Festival, bringing together some of the performers and organisers. It's on Radio 4 at 10 a.m. The Castaway in Desert Island Discs Revisited from 2009 is the singer Barry Manilow on Radio 4 Extra at 6 a.m, 11 a.m. and 5 p.m. In David Attenborough's Life Stories, he recalls how in Kenya he interviewed the Adamsons, famous for hand-rearing a lioness. Radio 4 Extra at 6:45 a.m, 11:45 a.m. and 5:45 p.m. The General Knowledge Quiz, Brain of Britain, continues on Radio 4 at 4:30 p.m. Ringing the Bull Ring follows the bell ringers of St Martin in the Bull Ring as they endeavour to add to their record at the 2026 National 12 Bells Striking Contest in York. Radio 4 at 7:15 p.m. From Our Own Correspondent is on Radio 4 at 9:30 p.m. Turning now to those programmes which are broadcast at the same time every day from Monday to Friday. Breathing Underwater is the tale of a diver's search for a shipwreck on Radio 4 Extra at 8:45 a.m., 1:45 p.m. and 7:45 p.m. Monday to Friday. Human Hosts sounds intriguing. It's described as a light-hearted series in which actors take on the guise of parasites infesting the human body. On Radio 4 Extra at 9:30 a.m. every day this week. Five Red Herrings is a dramatisation of the 1931 Dorothy L. Sayers murder mystery, starring Ian Carmichael as the gentleman detective. On Radio 4 Extra, every day at 6 a.m., 11 a.m. and 5 p.m. The book of the week is All the Beauty in the World, Patrick Bringley's memoir, in which he describes how he came to terms with the death of his brother by becoming a guard at the Metropolitan Museum of Arts in New York. Radio 4 at 11:45 a.m. each day this week. The series Human Intelligence, Conversationalists, continues to explore the minds of subjects including Voltaire, Desmond Tutu and Homer. On Radio 4 at 1:45 p.m. Monday to Friday. The Composer of the Week features conversation with Sally Beamish, born in 1956, at her home on the south coast of England. On Radio 3 at 4 p.m. every day this week. The Book at Bedtime, Mr. Sidhu's Post Office, continues on Radio 4 at 10:45 p.m. Monday to Friday. Now, some individual programmes to listen to through the week, starting with Monday the 24th of August. Children of the Enemy brings us the remarkable story of German children fostered by Dutch families after the Second World War. It's on Radio 4 Extra at 10:30 a.m. and 4:30 p.m. Great Lives pays tribute to Eric Ashby, who lived in the New Forest where he painstakingly filmed the local wildlife. Radio 4 at 3 p.m. In Sounds Natural, in a programme from 1976, Bing Crosby can be heard discussing his love of nature and the outdoors on Radio 4 Extra at 4 p.m. The last in the current series of comedy, Just a Minute, hosted by Sue Perkins, is on Radio 4 at 6:30 p.m. Today's BBC Proms features a programme of American music on Radio 3 at 7 p.m. Two short stories by A.S. Byatt are featured on what would have been her 90th birthday. The July Ghost at 9 p.m. and Rose-Coloured Teacups at 9:45 p.m. both on Radio 4 Extra. Some suggestions for Tuesday the 25th of August. Today's drama is The Test Batter Can't Breathe, in which test match commentary is interrupted by news that one of England's most talented batsmen has gone missing. Radio 4 at 2:15 p.m. A new series of History's Secret Heroes, presented by Helena Bonham Carter, begins with the story of Elvira Chaudhwa, D-Day's double-crossing agent, on Radio 4 at 3 p.m. In What's Up Docs, Chris and Zan van Tulliken unpack the benefits of walking while taking a stroll through Sheffield Botanical Gardens on Radio 4 at 4:30 p.m. Today's BBC Proms from the Royal Albert Hall have a programme of music associated with the James Bond franchise on Radio 3 at 7 p.m. In Touch brings us news, views and information for people who are blind or partially sighted, presented as usual by Peter White on Radio 4 at 8:40 p.m. Moving on to Wednesday the 26th of August. Men of Intelligence is a drama set in 1960 London, where a Russian Bally Star wants to defect. MI5 want to help him, but MI6 wants to send him back. Radio 4 Extra at 7 a.m, 12 noon and 6 p.m. Choral Evensong comes from the Chapel of St John's College, Cambridge, on Radio 3 at 3 p.m. Lab-grown life explores the rapidly advancing field of synthetic biology on Radio 4 at 3:30 p.m. In the series Nature Bang, the presenters head into the woods to learn more about the culture of the great tit on Radio 4 at 4 p.m. In Word from Cupid, a talking parrot comes to the rescue of a husband and wife who have drifted apart after 27 years of marriage on Radio 4 Extra at 9 p.m. Then on Thursday, the 27th of August, Natalie Haynes stands up for the classics, continues with a reading of the Argonautica by Apollonius, narrating Jason and the Argonauts' epic quest to retrieve the Golden Fleece on Radio 4 at 9 a.m. In a programme from 2002 in the series Great Lives, the subject is philosopher Friedrich Nietzsche on Radio 4 Extra at 10 a.m. and 4 p.m. Open Country joins a group of people on a river pilgrimage in Kent, walking the entire length of the River Medway, Radio 4 at 3 p.m. In The Governor's Consort, Lady Edith is sailing with her husband to a lonely life on a South Atlantic island where he is about to become governor, on Radio 4 Extra at 3 p.m. and 9 p.m. A new series of Word of Mouth begins with a programme about the Gaelic language, presented by Michael Rosen on Radio 4 at 3:30 p.m. And so finally to Friday the 28th of August. The food programme brings us a day in the life of a school catering manager, focusing on Andrew Cowan, who has been helping transform school food in Bury, Greater Manchester, by bringing local, organic and seasonal produce to 56 council-run schools. Radio 4 at 11 a.m. Today's edition of Rare Earth investigates how the environment will be impacted by Andy Burnham's new government and explores the major decisions that will need to be taken on energy, transport and nature protection on Radio 4 at 12:04 p.m. In the series Living on the Edge, this week's programme visits Skegness and joins John Nuttall and his donkeys on the beach on Radio 4 at 2:45 p.m. Enjoy your listening week.
TNS Soundings.
Hi everybody, this is Rosie and I am reading the quiz for you again this week. I hope you all do well. Here we go. Number one, the solar eclipse of 12th of August was the first total solar eclipse visible from mainland Europe since which year? Number two, a Welsh scout group on a camping trip near Bristol were unexpectedly recruited to help land what type of vehicle? Number three, London Heathrow lost its position as Europe's busiest airport by passenger numbers in July 2026. To which airport? Number four. The 2026 European Athletics Championships have been taking place in which UK city? Number five. What forced South West London theme park Chessington World of Adventures to close on Monday? Number six. A Mars bar, dating from 1991, was discovered during a house clearance in August 2026. Approximately what percentage heavier was it than today's version? Number seven. Which country was Donald Trump in when he secretly switched planes in August 2026, reportedly using a catering vehicle as part of the operation. Number 8. Which late pop star has been honoured with a Barbie doll modelled after her? Number 9. This is slightly different. So it's what links these people? What links Woodison, Bannister, Ibbotson, Coe, Ovette, Cram and Kerr? And the last question. What is the UK's only aquatic songbird? Well, here we are with the questions, this time along with the answers to the quiz for this week. Number 1. The solar eclipse of 12th of August was the first total solar eclipse visible for mainland Europe since which year? And that was since 1999. Number 2. A Welsh scout group on a camping trip near Bristol were unexpectedly recruited to help land what type of vehicle? And that was a hot air balloon. Number 3. London Heathrow lost its position as Europe's busiest airport by passenger numbers in July 2026 to which airport? And that was Istanbul Airport. Number 4. The 2026 European Athletics Championships have been taking place in which UK city? And that is, of course, Birmingham. Number 5. What forced South West London theme park Chessington World of Adventures to close on Monday? They had a burst water main. Number 6. A Mars bar dating from 1991 was discovered during a house clearance in August 2026. Approximately what percentage heavier was it than today's version? And as expected, it was 56% heavier. We all knew the Mars bars have got smaller. Number 7. Which country was Donald Trump in when he secretly switched planes in August 2026, reportedly using a catering vehicle as part of the operation? He was in Turkey. Number 8. Which late pop star has been honoured with a Barbie doll modelled after her? And that's Whitney Houston. Number 9. What links these people? Woodison, Bannister, Ibbotson, Coe, Ovette, Cram and Kerr. They are all male British runners who have held the world mile record. And number 10. What is the UK's only aquatic songbird? And it's the Dipper. I hope you all did well this week.
Albion Match Report. Albion started the 2026-27 Sky Bet Championship campaign with a pulsating 2-1 win against Norwich City. Following a goalless first half, Orn Hegbo and JJ Morgan grabbed all 3 points for the Baggies, even if Matthias Quistvaagen's consolation set up a frantic finale. James Morrison's men, backed by another superb sold-out away end, dug in during a testing first period. Max O'Leary made an excellent early stop to deny Canary's skipper, Kenny McLean, before also saving Callum Fisher's stroke low strike. Hegbo dragged one wide during an Albion sped midway through the half. However, it was some superb defending from his fellow Norwegian, Felix Horn-Meyer, down the other end that ensured the game was level at the break. The midfielder nodded over his own crossbar as Norwich looked destined to open the scoring through a back post header before Jose Cordoba guided another effort past the post moments later. Hosts Norwich began the second half strongly but found a dogged Baggies defence in their way again. A sea of bodies diverted Anis Ben Slimani's goal bound half volley away after the restart, and Nat Phillips also bravely blocked Andre Book's close range attempt. While O'Leary had to make another great save to keep out Isha's header, the visitors did cause City problems. Morgan saw an attempt deflected off target, and Nat Phillips headed just wide with Albion growing into it. Albion then edged ahead on the 75th minute mark, a slick move ended when Hegbo met Morgan's cross, celebrating his 50th appearance for the club by netting the first goal of the campaign. Isaac Price struck the crossbar as Morrison's team kept their foot on the gas, and Morgan soon beat several Norwich defenders and converted a low finish to score the Baggies' second 3 minutes from the end. Norwich's Chris Garden netted in stoppage time, making it a nervy few final seconds. Albion held on, though, to kick their campaign off in style. Carrow Road.
Moving away now, just for a while, from the local news. A few weeks ago, we had a presentation from Chantal Richards of the Black Country Living Museum to remind us what's going on there and to ask us what we really wanted from the museum. But I haven't got time to play much of that, and to be honest, the recording isn't up to much. But here's just an extract from what she said to us.
I do recognise some of your faces. You've visited before at the museum. It's been years since I've been here. It's been so long. And, you know, thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak and do a little bit of consultation with you guys. I know that in the past we have audio descriptive tours that we advertise on our website, and sometimes we do talk about it on the Talking newspaper. But why I'm here today is because we've taken a pause. Not so much on group bookings, you can still come along. Because we used to advertise them on our access tours, which happen every month on a Saturday. So that means you can come along independently or with a group, and you can book on to an audio descriptive tour, which took place between 10:30 and 12 p.m. And then that accompanied with a BSL tour in the afternoon. But what we found is that we weren't getting much take up with the community from, you know, visually impaired communities. And we often get members who are just, you know, our regular visitors who want to come along, and they see the themes and they're like, oh, this looks interesting. And we do themes on access tours that are, for example, we had one that was very popular last year, Black Country Murders. That was very interesting for some people. I didn't realise how unpopular that would have been. We do things from Black Country Murders to Boston Fittle, to the gardens. And so the theme tours are different in every month, all around just Black Country history. Oh, we also have a new Peaky Blinders tour. Well, it's talking about the different places where it was filmed. Would you be interested in doing something like that? If it was, you know, because we do have, we've started doing that. We're getting more international visitors really drawn to that.
Now, I recall that the suggestions raised the possibility of a group membership for possibly SVI members or people who belong to clubs or societies. So that might come about. But in the meantime, here's a few details about how to contact Black Country Living Museum, BCLM as it's known for short, and the various offers they have at the moment for reductions to visit the Black Country Living Museum.
Ticket and booking inquiries. Telephone 01215208054. Lines open from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. Monday to Friday. Email ticketing@bclm.com. What it costs to visit? Adult, 16 plus years. In advance, £27.95. Enjoy free daytime visits for a whole year. Senior concession, 65 plus. In advance, £25.95. Plus, enjoy free daytime visits for a whole year. Benefit concession. In advance, £24.95.
And a reminder of that telephone number, 0121 520 8054. There is a lot to see at the Black Country Museum. My only gripe is that the people who were putting through the tram connection to Dudley didn't see fit to put a stop near the Black Country Museum. You have to go into Dudley and walk back again, which seems crazy to me because the tram line runs only 200 yards or so behind the Black Country Museum.
TNF Soundings. features from across the UK.
I'm Bob Baker.
And I'm Jill Hardiker.
And together we are Sound and Vision,
bringing you the best information, technology and interviews for the visually impaired and those supporting them.
This time we're looking at travelling with a visual impairment. What help is available and how to book it? First of all, we looked at air travel.
The most important thing is preparation and making sure that your travel company is aware of your needs. Most airlines require at least 48 hours notice of this to make your travel experience smoother.
Over 75 airports globally, including 17 in the UK and Ireland, are covered by a company called ABM, who provide passenger services for travellers with reduced vision. Personnel are trained to describe the layouts of the surroundings, distances, stairs and obstacles using non-visual language.
They offer guiding and navigation with dedicated staff, providing sight guidance and verbally offering an arm or an elbow, which includes personal guidance and navigation from your arrival drop-off point to the departure gate, assistance with navigation to the terminal, duty-free and security areas, and pre-boarding onto the aircraft. They can also help with retrieving luggage and navigating to your onward transport at your destination.
If you'd like to take your guide dog, ABM ensures service animals remain with the passenger, are safely processed through security, and have access to airport relief areas.
ABM integrates with programmes like the Hidden Disability Sunflower Lanyard Scheme, helping staff quickly identify and support passengers who have low vision or non-visible sight conditions. Visually impaired assistance with ABM or any other airport special assistance provider is completely free of charge.
ABM stand at the airport can offer help if needed and you haven't already booked. The good news is that UK airports and airlines are legally required to provide special assistance to people with disabilities who travel by air at no extra charge and with no proof of disabilities needed.
Next, we approach the Rail Delivery Group to find out about what assistance is available for visually impaired travellers on the trains. A Rail Delivery Group spokesman said,
"Making the railway more accessible is important so passengers can travel independently, safely and with confidence. We are working to improve the support available for people with accessibility needs, including those who are blind and partially sighted. We want a railway that works for everyone. To help make this happen, we are working with customers, accessibility groups, organisations supporting blind and partially sighted people, and our staff to make improvements across the network."
The statement continued to say that a range of support is already in place to help people travel more easily. Braille station maps to help blind and partially sighted passengers understand station layouts. Disability persons' rail cards give eligible passengers discounted fares on national rail journeys. Good Maps technology, which is available at certain stations, uses a phone app to give step-by-step audio directions inside stations, helping visually impaired passengers find their way independently. The Hidden Disabilities Sunflower Lanyard lets help staff know that a passenger may need extra help, time or support. Audio announcements on trains and in stations with clearer and simpler language introduced recently make information easier to understand.
Passenger Assist and Turn Up and Go offer help with things like boarding, changing trains or getting around the station, whether booked in advance or requested on arrival. Priority seating near the train doors, making it easier for the passenger who needs to sit close to the exit. Tactile paving along the platform edges, providing a textured surface to help passengers identify where the platform edge is safely.
For further information about National Rail Enquiries, Journey Planning and Passenger Assist, you can phone 03457 48 49 50. And that's available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, except Christmas Day. Or you could email customer.relations@nationalrail.co.uk.
Maybe you'd like to take a long-distance trip by bus or coach. Most companies offer assistance to visually impaired travellers, and this is what we learned. We started with National Express, which has a dedicated assisted travel team service to support customers wishing to use their long-distance fleet of coaches. VI solo travellers can request assistance by filling in the online form or calling 037 17 81 8181, and that's from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. or by emailing the service team at addl@nationalexpress.com.
Next, we looked at Megabus UK, which offers free travel companions for eligible blind passengers and provides pre-booked boarding and station assistance. If you have visual impairments, you can request alternative journey formats like large print and notify the driver of your specific stop so they can alert you when you arrive. You can email enquiries@megabus.co.uk or you can call 0141 352 4444, and that's during business hours, which are Monday to Sunday, 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. They ask that you have your booking reference number ready if you have a query about an existing reservation. So what help is there for VI ferry travellers?
Ferry operators provide extensive assistance for blind and visually impaired passengers, including guided boarding, orientation, braille signage and permission for guide dogs. By law, UK and EU ferry operators must provide this help for free, provided you request it in advance.
Staff can meet you at the terminal, help you navigate through the port, assist you during boarding and disembarkation, and help you locate seating or toilets. Crew members can guide you round the ship to familiarise you with the layout. Some UK operators, such as Whitelink, even use audio-described QR codes in terminals. Ships generally feature braille signage, tactile lift buttons, and frequent audible announcements for safety updates.
Registered guide dogs and assistant dogs travel completely free of charge and have access to passenger decks and facilities. Many operators like CalMac and Whitelink allow your fully sighted carer or companion to travel for free if you need dedicated assistance during your crossing.
You must notify the ferry company of your specific requirements when booking, or at least 48 hours before you travel. This allows staff to flag your reservation, arrange priority parking close to lifts if you're travelling with a vehicle, and ensure the correct number of crew are available to support you. You can check route details or pre-arrange your assistance on the operator websites. If you're using a travel agent, then they can do that for you.
Within the four countries of the UK, there are different ways of accessing help. Let's start with England. Blind and visually impaired travellers are eligible for free bus travel and discount train travel across England under the government-backed schemes.
Blind travellers in Wales receive substantial concessions, including free bus travel, discount on train tickets for you and a companion. These benefits are available if you are registered blind, severely sight impaired, or partially sighted.
In Northern Ireland, the Registered Blind Smart Pass is a government scheme that grants eligible individuals free travel on public transport services. The scheme is funded by the Northern Ireland Concessionary Fares Scheme and applies to TransLink buses and rail services, as well as cross-border journeys into the Republic of Ireland.
Registered blind people are entitled to free travel on all TransLink bus and rail services, that's Metro, Glider and Ulster Bus, using a registered blind smart pass. This pass also offers free travel on rural dialer lift services and valid point-to-point cross-border travel, whilst partially sighted individuals are entitled to half fare concessions.
You can pick up an application form in person at a manned TransLink bus or rail station. You can request the application form by phoning 028 9066 6630, or you can request one via email by sending your name and full address to smartpass@translink.co.uk.
In Scotland, the Scottish Thistle Assistance is a free initiative designed to make travelling on public transport in Scotland easier and more comfortable for anyone who needs a little extra help. You can use it on buses, trains, trams, planes and ferries across the country. There is the Thistle app or the Thistle card. Both options let you tell transport staff quickly and discreetly what kind of support you would like. For example, more time to get to your seat, or clearer, slower communication.
You can use the Thistle card on the CityLink, which provides an extensive network of express coaches connecting over 200 destinations across Scotland, including services to Northern Ireland and seasonal routes to Blackpool. The Seven City Network connects Scotland's major hubs, which are Glasgow, Edinburgh, Aberdeen, Dundee, Inverness, Perth and Stirling. In the Highlands and West Coast, it connects the Central Belt to rural and tourism destinations in the Highlands and Islands.
The Thistle card or app do not give you free discounted travel. For this, you would need to apply for an NEC, which is a National Entitlement Card, giving free, unlimited, standard class travel on registered local and long distance buses across Scotland. If your card has an I+1 symbol, a companion can travel with you for free on ScotRail services within Scotland. It also entitles you to free travel on registered local bus services and on standard class ScotRail services within Scotland. It also covers travel to and from Carlisle and Berwick-on-Tweed.
To apply for a Thistle card, email thistlecard@sestran.gov.uk or ring on 01 31 524 5153, or write to Thistle Assistance, SESTRAN 3D Bridge, Victoria Quay, and the postal address is Echo Hotel 6 Quebec, Quebec.
To apply for an NEC card, you can submit an application online via the getyournec.scot portal.
Hopefully you will find some of this information useful. And Jill and I would like to wish you safe and happy journeys wherever you may wander.
Thank you for listening to Sound and Vision with Bob and Jill. Take care, and until the next time, it's goodbye from us both.
TNF Soundings.
Hello, Roger here with news of a blind marathon runner and a new invention that's helping him make history. He's using glasses that enable sighted people to give him guidance and direction in real time while he's running. His name is Clark Reynolds, and he's a 45-year-old man. He has run in the London Marathon using a tethered guide runner. That's someone who's tied to them that runs along with them. And he did that 3 years ago. But now he's upping the ante. Rather than using a physical guide, he's got an app on a pair of specs called Be My Eyes. And that will connect him with a worldwide network of sighted volunteers. Through a miniature camera mounted on the front of these smart glasses and speakers in the earpieces, people will be able to see what he could see and speak to him in real time, directing him through the typical 26.2 miles, that's 42.2 kilometres, of your average or your real accurate marathon. He says that running has given him another opportunity to spread the word about what unsighted people can do. He previously competed in the London Marathon with the help of a physical guide runner, but plans on running now with the help of a worldwide network of virtual volunteers. He's been supported by Fight for Sight, a charity which funds research into sight loss and for which he is an ambassador. Reynolds, who's from Havant, is also known as Mr. Dot, because that's a name he employs when he travels round the country teaching Braille through art in schools. He's been visually impaired in his right eye from the age of 6, but 13 years ago he noticed a shadow in his left eye, and since which time he's lost his sight. Be My Eyes is used for day-to-day tasks such as helping visually impaired people find the right button on a TV remote, for example. But Reynolds has explained that he accesses the help of volunteers, who are complete strangers, by saying, "Hey, Meta, come and be my eyes," and they will tell him if there's any obstacle or person in his way. He describes the glasses as similar to a Peloton bike with someone guiding you. "They're not only my eyes, but my cheerleaders too," he added as he runs along. So it can be surprising when they connect and see Reynolds in his mid-run. They probably think, "Oh gosh, this is a bit strange," he said, "but I'm really excited to be doing this. If you had told me 13 years ago that I'd be an ambassador for a major charity and I'd be inspiring visually impaired children around the world, I would never have believed you."
TNS Soundings.
Bus travel is changing. What will it mean for you? By Elizabeth Glinker, West Midlands political editor, and Chloe Hughes. West Midlands bus services in the West Midlands conurbation are to be brought back into public control for the first time in 40 years. The region's Mayor Richard Parker said the West Midlands Combined Authority, WMCA, would acquire National Express's West Midlands bus operation as part of a move to franchise services. The model allows WMCA to have smaller companies running individual services across the region and the say as to who they are. Prime Minister Andy Burnham is backing what he called a bold move and the biggest act of public control since he came into office earlier this summer. Parker said it would protect bus routes and jobs. But what does this mean for the passenger? And how will things change? Who owns the bus network now? Mobico, an international transport operator, is the parent company of the National Express coach business. It says it runs about 1,400 buses in total, facilitating about 120 million passenger journeys. WMCA will pay £24 million up front for the business's West Midlands arm and will be given full control of the network, assets and operations. When and where is this happening? The purchase will be completed in November. National Express West Midlands operates in a huge urban area. This includes Birmingham and the Black Country, Wolverhampton and Coventry. The sale is expected to be completed in November. Why has the bus network been bought? Mobico said the sale came after the WMCA approved plans to shift from deregulated bus services to a local franchising model by the end of 2029, with the latter presenting a significant headwind for the group where managing costs was concerned. In 2025, public consultation found about 75% of respondents were in favour of introducing a franchise model in the region. Later this month, bus operators will be invited to tender to run routes across parts of the network. What's going to change? In the near future, there will not be any changes to routes, fares, or services, other than the usual resumption of September timetables, National Express West Midlands said. All tickets remain valid, including monthly and annual tickets. Franchising the buses will begin in April next year, says Parker. When we start, the public will see those real differences, he stated. We'll be deciding the network, the timetable, and the fares. Benefits to the public could include making fares more affordable. The move also means that about 4,800 jobs are protected, Parker says, as well as up to 750 buses running a day. Burnham said. The West Midlands can now move more quickly towards an integrated public transport system across bus, tram and train, and one which is very much set up to serve the public. When you've got that public control, you can deliver more public benefit in lower fares, newer buses, and that is exactly what will happen here in the West Midlands.
So it's all change on the buses. Well, not just yet, but these things might become more evident in November next year. I think the West Midlands local authority will be running the bus service pretty well, rather than West Midlands Travel on behalf of National Express, who have run the buses for I don't know how many years, because the bus service has been deregulated for nearly 40 years now. I well remember when that happened in the 80s. But we must close now, so a round of thanks to our readers, who this week were James, Debbie, Lauren, Pam was chipping in, doing a bit of the practical reading there instead of staying in the background, Jenny, and finishing up with Kate. And a mention to everybody else involved. I've mentioned Pam, but also Sue choosing the articles, Gavin and Tony doing the copying and posting out from West Bromwich Town Hall. Do hope some of you are able to access the podcast or even to listen online, because Postal Service being what it is with all the delays, it's a much faster way of catching up with the news we're able to give you. Well, the weather certainly is changing for the better, I feel now. It's still rather humid, and I did catch the rain as I went out early today to do some shopping, and I believe there'll be some more rain tomorrow. Do hope I might meet up with some of you in the next few weeks on one or two SVI activities, but for the time being, I'll wish you all the best for the coming week. Take care, and it's bye-bye from me, Ray, and the team, and we'll be back with you next week for what I guess will be a bank holiday edition. Bye-bye for now.
To use our talk phone service to listen to Sandwell Talking News or leave us a message, phone 0121 699 6696. If you are using a landline in the 0121 area, then just dial 699 6696.